Gracias por descargar este podcast de Hey Festival. Para más información sobre nuestros festivales internacionales y sobre cómo acceder a nuestro archivo, por favor visite heyfestival.org. Gracias.
Hello. My name is Eric Salisbury. I am a Welsh poet. I'm here in the Hay Festival because I've been asked to be the one of the international fellows for this year, which means I have the very difficult task of going from festival to festival, going to events, enjoying myself and talking to people about Wales as well and my work, which is great. I've already been to Kenya in Nairobi and to Dhaka in Bangladesh, but I've also been to India, to Kerala, been to schools also with the British Council in India, in Mumbai and so forth. But I was chosen, I suppose, to do this fellowship on the back of the fact that I am also, in Wales, the Welsh Children's Laureate. That's actually a made-up title because it doesn't have an English title in Wales. In Welsh, we call it Bardd Plant Cymru, which is, if you translate it directly, it's Wales's children's poet, basically. But it's a scheme that's been going on for about 10 years. And what I do is go to schools, go around schools in Wales, teaching children, although I don't like to use the word teach either. I like to encourage them, I suppose. I try not to give them any work. I just try and get them to like poetry. So I go around different schools in Wales and sometimes further afield, conducting workshops on poetry for children in Welsh. Now, in case you don't know where Wales is, it's a very small country. It's part of the United Kingdom. It is next door to England. It's stuck to England. It's west of England, between England and Ireland. But of course, there's a sea between Wales and Ireland. But we're actually stuck to England. We are not stuck to Scotland, although it's part of the United Kingdom, obviously. We have about 3 million people living in Wales, which is not very much, as people point out for me when I go around the world. And they ask, well, how many people live in Wales? Oh, 3 million. And then they laugh in my face because there's about 3 million people living in their city, at least, usually. But it's enough to sustain a country. Not everybody in Wales speaks Welsh, unfortunately. It was until last November, we thought we knew that about 21% of the people of Wales spoke Welsh, but the results of a recent census has actually shown that the number of Welsh people, Welsh-speaking people, has gone down to 19%, which is obviously a great worry. It is a minority language within its own country, and it's a difficult task, obviously, to be a Welsh poet, to be a Welsh speaker. It's something that you're constantly faced with the fact that if you don't try your best to speak the language, you have to consciously actually say, right, well, I have to do this decision. I want to be a Welsh speaker. And you're faced with the fact that your language and your culture could, perceivably, come to an end within a few centuries, if something goes wrong, and if different different aspects of Welsh life don't maybe support Welsh language culture. But at the moment, it's alive. And in parts of Wales, it's thriving. And what I've seen when I go around the schools, I've been to around 90 schools right now. It's a 2-year post, being the Welsh Children's Laureate. I've got until May this year in the job, and I've been to around 90 schools. And what I see in the schools is very encouraging, because all the children, they learn Welsh in school, in primary school specifically. And the attitude towards the Welsh language is very positive, generally speaking. The problem then comes in secondary school and then into adulthood. Sometimes the language can be lost for different reasons. But anyway, it's still alive at the moment, and it's thriving sometimes in some parts of Wales. Now, I am I suppose I could tell you how it feels to be a poet in a who uses a minority language. Is that something that No, I could talk about what I do with the schools.
You're going to tell us about how complex it is to write in a minority language and the interactions that are created between poetry, language, and translation.
Oh, yeah, translation, okay. Okay. Well, when I compose poetry or anything in Welsh, I obviously don't think about it as a minority language. It's just my language. It's my first language. I speak Welsh with my girlfriend. I speak Welsh with my friends, with my parents, with my brother and my sister. I live my life in Welsh, basically, in a small town on the coast in Wales, right in the middle of Wales, called Aberystwyth. And I live my whole life there in through the medium of Welsh. So, obviously, from my point of view, it doesn't feel like a minority language where I live. I was going to say something there, but I've forgotten what I was going to say. I don't know what else I can say, really. Do I translate my poems? I not always, no, because when I compose a poem, it's usually for a Welsh audience. That's to say, usually I write a poem on request most of the time. And that's the thing about Welsh poetry. It's a very social culture. The Welsh poetry has always been an oral craft. In my work, from day to day, I research medieval Welsh poetry. Back in medieval times, poetry in Wales was something that was revered, and poets were very, very important, and they were very important people in Welsh society. They went around Wales praising different people in exchange for food, money, and place to stay for the night, maybe. And they're quite important. You know, the bond between the patron and the poet was pretty. It was an important part of society in that time, and part of that, the system of patronage hasn't survived until today. But certain parts of that tradition have, for example, the fact that poetry is read aloud in village halls and pubs around Wales, and it's a very natural thing to happen, especially in some parts of Wales. It's a very natural thing to listen to poetry and to ask a poet to actually compose a poem for something, a particular event, maybe like a birthday or wedding, maybe. When the society comes together, the event is marked with a poem, and that survived until today. So most of the poetry I compose, if I think back over the last year, all the poems probably that I've composed, more or less, have been for christenings or birthdays. Many of them for people I don't really know, but they contact me and they ask me, can you write me a poem? How much do you charge? And it's an important part of the culture, I think, and it's quite unique. So in terms of translating then, no, I don't have to translate, you know, it doesn't really come up that often that I need to translate, but I wouldn't maybe translate those poems anyway, because they wouldn't be very translatable, as in they wouldn't generally. As in you could translate them, obviously, but the occasion is so specific, and the nature of the poetry is so specific, I suppose. It would be futile maybe to translate, but I do sometimes translate other types of poems. And I enjoy doing that. It's fun. I find it's difficult sometimes, but it's always rewarding, because when I reread my own poems, sometimes I when you have to translate those poems line by line, you have to really ask yourself your question: what exactly am I saying here, and what do I want to take with me into the other language? Because obviously you can interpret one poem, a single poem, in so many different ways. You have to, as a translator, I believe that you have to choose your own interpretation and create a new poem. It helps, I think, if the translator is a poet himself or herself, because you're creating a brand new poem. But it's always fun, because I sometimes find things in my own poetry that I didn't really know that were there until I scrutinize it again from another perspective. Translating into English is a lot of fun. Maybe you've noticed, but I don't really speak English very often. It's odd, actually, because sometimes, well, when I was growing up, I didn't speak much English at all. It was always Welsh all the time. So when I'm speaking English, it feels odd in my mouth, as in I'm using my tongue in ways that I wouldn't usually do. And after a while, you do feel that I feel that my mouth is cramping sometimes. It's an odd feeling. It's an odd sensation, but in terms of writing, then sometimes, because I read so much English when I was growing up, sometimes I feel that my written English sometimes is better than my written Welsh, almost, because because I read so much English when I was growing up, and English is obviously all around you, well, all around us in Wales. You see it everywhere, and it's on the telly, and you know, you can always see it. So it's an odd. It's an odd relationship, I suppose, I have with both languages. By now, it's difficult to remember because I've been so busy over the last year. The only poems that I do write, obviously, are the ones that have a deadline and have some sort of financial reward at the end. But I remember when I was in college, I wrote a lot of poems, a lot of humorous poems, I suppose, pulling my own leg. I wrote a poem about my hair, for example. Because when I was in college, I had even more hair. It was in the same style. I gelled the quiff up, and it was quite big sometimes. And people would take the piss when I was out in the pubs and the clubs in college. So I thought, well, okay, this is something I can write about, and I wanted to write something that would be a bit more relevant to people my own age as well, because poetry can get a bit stuffy sometimes, especially in Wales, because it's a very traditional culture in parts, and it can get a bit too conservative sometimes. You know, when I was in school, for example, I thought poetry was something that, you know, you had to talk about a mountain somewhere or countryside, you know, wondering about, thinking about lost love or something, I don't know. It wasn't real, you know, it wasn't something that you could relate to. So in college I thought, well, what would I write if I was speaking to my own generation, my own friends? And I think those are the kind of poems I would, if I had the time now, I would continue writing, I suppose. But actually, I drew a bit of inspiration for those kind of poems from medieval poets as well, especially one in particular, Dafydd ap Gwilym, a poet who lived in the 14th century. He's regarded by many Welshmen as the greatest Welsh poet, and he was great. He was an amazing poet, and he often took the mick out of himself. In very humorous poems, for example, he went to church, not to pray, but to look at the girls. And he overhears two girls speaking together, and he realizes that they're slagging him off. They're saying, "Who's that ugly guy in the back? He looks like he's got long hair, apparently, and he looks like a girl." So, as in, they're brilliant poems, and I thought, well, I can draw some inspiration out of this. And I enjoy reading those kind of poems for audiences in Wales, because I get so much more out of it then. So I suppose that's the kind of poetry more humorous kind of poetry, because in Wales, if you get a chance to read a poem in front of an audience, most of the time it'll be part of some sort of competition. We have maybe three kind types of competition at the moment in Wales. The first one, the most traditional maybe, is called a talwrn. A talwrn, which means a cockfight. Apparently. So it's translated, I think, sometimes as the poet's cockpit. But it's, you know, it's not that cool really, because it's pretty staid and it's pretty traditional. As in, two teams compete together, and there's a judge then who gives out the marks. And you know, it's pretty, you know, there's not much mudslinging really. But then you have what we call ymbryson, which is basically the same thing, but with one difference. With a talwrn, you get the subjects for the different competitions a few weeks beforehand. So you get a few weeks to write your poem, and usually, you know, it's got to be good. With the ymbryson, you get your subjects a few hours before, maybe. Or half an hour before, and you get the adrenaline going, and you write the poem, and that can get a bit more boisterous, and usually more than two teams, you get three or four teams, and but there's still somebody in the middle saying, this gets 10 marks and this gets 5 and whatever. So those two competitions, they're pretty good, a lot of fun sometimes, but what is more fun is Stomp, which is not a team competition. Every poet competes on his own in rounds. The way to win a round is that the audience votes for your performance or your poem. If you win your round, you go into the final. And if you win in the final, you win a stool, like a milking stool. what's a stool? It's like a wooden chair without a back. The reason it's a stool is because the most prestigious poetry competition in the Welsh language is the chair competition. You win a chair, not like this, but you know, a wooden chair made by a craftsman. It's a one-off. And you have to write a very long poem, usually about 200, 300 lines. If you win, you win a chair and 750 quid, but the chair is the main thing, really. So you get you win a chair. So with a stomp, the stool is kind of taking a piss out of the chair. You know, it's something you can milk a cow on if you want. You know, it's something. But sometimes, some of the stomps, if you look at the stools, they, you know, I have a few stools at home. They're pretty basic, but some of the stools, man, they're outrageous. Again, created by a craftsman, a one-off, and sometimes, you know, you can get pretty big. But obviously, in a stomp, because of the fact that you have to gain the audience's support, you often get very humorous poems, because it's, if you want an audience to vote for you, you've got to make them laugh sometimes, or cry. Either or. And it's difficult, isn't it? You get pretty serious poems sometimes, and the audience sobers up. But it's always possible to trump that with a humorous poem, and you get pretty dodgy stuff sometimes as well, with loads of swearing and stuff, and it's great, it's a lot of fun. So if I would write a poem, I think I would write something that I could read in a stomp, I think, which is kind of like a slam, I suppose, is it? I think it's our version of that.
You were saying that you write
about the fact that the audience for that poem, due to the language in which it is written, it's pretty reduced. Do you think about like maybe not having an audience someday, or you just write for yourself? I mean, how do you picture that?
When I'm writing a poem, I don't actually think of the audience that much. I think of myself first. It has to be true to myself, I feel. And that can be difficult because competition and competing is such an integral part of the Welsh tradition. If you want to be a poet, if you want to be someone in the poetry world in Wales, you have to win something. You know, people sometimes don't know any poem that you've written, but they know that you've won a chair or something, or a stool. So it can be difficult. You see with some poets sometimes they write exclusively for the audience or the competition or the judges who judge those individual competitions. They look, oh, this poet is judging here. I know what this poet likes. So it can produce then poetry that isn't as forward-looking as you would like, because they know sometimes, for example, in the chair competition, it is pretty prestigious. It is the poetry competition that you want to win. But I know that there is a certain type of poem that will win that kind of competition. And it's a shame, really, that sometimes new types of poetry don't get awarded the chair because the judges sometimes think, oh, I don't like this kind of poetry. So if you want to win, you have to look at the judge and think, is he gonna, this poet isn't going to award a new style of poetry. So you give in sometimes, and you think, this is not the kind of poem that I would prefer writing, but I want to win that chair, so I'm going to write it. It can be difficult sometimes. You have to, but I think you have to be true to yourself first and think, this is a poem that I'm happy with. If they award, if they think it comes in first place, well, fine. But if they don't, well, stuff them. Because I've got a poem out of it that I'm happy with. And I think that's important. A poet that I greatly admire called Dick Jones, who recently died a few years ago. He was a brilliant poet, and he won many chairs. One of the main competitions that he won, he was talking afterwards, and he was saying, "Well, yes, I've won a chair, and this is what I've been awarded, but the real prize for me is the poem that I've written." It's brand new, and it's I'm very happy with it, and it's the prize, really. I try to keep that in mind.
Can I ask you what balance do you strike between spontaneity and technique? And maybe you can say a little bit about, in the Welsh language, rhythm, measure, and I'm afraid I can't pronounce it, but I think you're a specialist in a bit of that, aren't you?
I suppose. Is that right? It is, yes. Yes, there is an ancient craft in Welsh poetry called cynghanedd. Cynghanedd can't be translated directly. There isn't a word, but it means harmony. It's a way of writing poetry, and it's quite unique to the Welsh language. It's You can see it, the roots of this kind of style in the earliest recorded Welsh poetry in the 6th century. But it's developed over the centuries naturally in the language and in the poetry until it became formalized, I suppose, by the 15th century. And it's the same now as it was in the 15th century in terms of the rules. The important thing to say about it is that it wasn't actually, Cynghanedd wasn't invented by a committee at any one time. It developed naturally within the language because of the Welsh poets' love of intricate patterns with words. It's comparable, I suppose, to the intricate Celtic patterns and knotworks that you see, for example, in the Book of Kells. It's that kind of Celtic mentality, I suppose, that love of intricate patterns. Cynghanedd, how can I describe? There are four main types of Cynghanedd. Two of them are based on consonants. So, basically speaking, you repeat all of the consonants in one half of the line in the same order in the other half. I can give you an example, I suppose. This is a very simple example. A leader of drunk ladies. I'm talking about a bouncer in a poem. A leader of drunk ladies. The Cynghanedd in this line is simply the L and the D in leader and the L and the D in ladies. It's a very simple example, obviously, but it does get a bit more intricate than that, but that is an example at least. So there are two different types of Cynghanedd that follow that principle. Then there is another Cynghanedd based on rhyme alone, where the penultimate syllable in a line is rhymed with another word somewhere else in the line. For example, concierge of the ledges, also a description of a bouncer. Concierge of the ledges. So the penultimate syllable, ledge, is rhymed with concierge of the ledges. That's the most simple type of Cynghanedd. It's called Cynghanedd lisg, which means a dragging Cynghanedd, I suppose. And you can hear the rhyme is being dragged, I suppose, through the line. Concierge of the ledges. It's a simple Cynghanedd, but I'm really fond of that type of Cynghanedd because there's some sort of nice simplicity to it. And the last type is based on both consonants and rhyme. For example, a simple example would be a bear in care of the keys. So, a bear in care of the keys. The bear rhymes with care, and then the care has a consonance with keys. It's as simple as that, really. Can get a bit more complicated, obviously, with different words. But those are the main four types. Now, it can sound as if it's very restricting. It can sound as if. But once you master that art, once you see that it can be very easy to say what you want in Cynghanedd, you realize that you can say anything you want in Cynghanedd. It's just like any other art, I suppose. It's very popular in Wales at the moment, especially with my generation. Probably because the generation before us, that came before us, they did a lot of work in terms of making Cynghanedd popular again, because it had always been a part of Welsh culture and Welsh poetry. But until about the 70s, maybe, the 70s, 60s and 70s, it wasn't actually as popular as it could have been. But from the 80s onwards, poets took Cynghanedd and created new humorous poems, and they took those poems to the pubs and the taverns and clubs, and they just read them and made people laugh. And I suppose on the back of that, my generation now sees the full potential of using that old craft, and it's thriving at the moment. It can be difficult, obviously, to balance between what you want to say and the rules of the game, but when you get it right, it's like slotting a puzzle together that can't be slotted in any other way, and you can't unbreak it. It's perfect. It's difficult to describe, but I sometimes use it in the schools. It can be fun sometimes. Actually, a lot of mathematicians in Wales are also strict meter poets, as we call them, because they obviously like the mathematical side of it, the logical puzzle solving side of it. It's like slotting different words together to make a jigsaw, maybe. It can be a lot of fun, but it helps sometimes. Sometimes, in the hands of poets who aren't that good, maybe, it can make something that isn't poetry sound like poetry. I think somebody described it as a good way of saying nothing. It can, as in, because it obviously sounds good. And if you say it in a certain way and it sounds nice, you get away with it sometimes. But some poets sometimes forget that they need some poetry in there as well. But it doesn't happen very often.
Do you have an example in Welsh?
Of different Cynghanedd. Yes. What have I got? I've got a few poems in Welsh. Let me see. Okay, this is a poem about teaching Cynghanedd to school children, and how difficult it can be, but how rewarding it can be also, because they piece different words together that shouldn't really be together, but adults maybe would think twice before putting them on paper, but it's great that children don't. And anyway, this is in Cynghanedd, in full Cynghanedd. It's about 12 lines, and this is how it sounds. Fel arfogi mwnciod, fel cnapan, dyma nhw'n dod a'i hatebion gwirion, gwych, a'i halawon dilewych o wreiddiol, a holl ryddid ei hodlu dodgi di hyd, mewn cerddi o'i llosgi'n llwyr sy'n deusennau di synwyr. Ond yn ffair sillafau llon, yn ffai y geiriau gwirion, mae awen glyfra'r enid a Chymru bach mwy ar byd. So, you know, that was the meter. We have different meters as well, which we use with Cynghanedd. Some of them are very popular. So for example, the most popular one is probably an englyn, which is four lines. 10 syllables in the first line, then 6, then 7, then 7, with a rhyme running through. And it's been compared to the haiku and so forth. You can say so much within that 30-syllable meter. That's great. What I read there was a kowydd, which is a meter based on couplets, rhyming with the rhymes always one word always has to be one syllable, and the other word has to be more than one syllable, but it doesn't matter which order they come in. So that poem was six couplets following that principle, with a canad in each line. It can feel a bit restrictive, but honestly, it's not. Once you master it, I suppose, it takes some time. I remember the first kowydd I wrote was pretty crap. And I nearly gave up, but the next kowydd then I wrote was okay. It was a bit better. And, it's just like anything, really. You just have to practice it.
We've talked about how you write for both pleasure, for a sort of job as a part of contest that we talked about. Do you think there is a difference, well, in each of those types of writing, in motivation, inspiration, and whatnot, writing for pleasure and for the task?
Well, it would be great if I could live in Wales as a poet. That would be great, I think, but I can't. The poets whose work I study every day, back in the 15th century, they could, and I'm very envious, because they were, to be able to just, and they traveled as well, it was brilliant. As in, I wouldn't really want to go back to the Middle Ages because they didn't have hospitals or something like that, but, or showers, or gel, so it wouldn't be much fun, but they, you know, the life of a poet was great in that time because they travelled around, they saw most of Wales, and it wasn't Wales as you see it today on the map either. Today you see a line going down showing where the border is between Wales and England. Well, in medieval times there wasn't a border really, and people spoke Welsh into parts of England today. So poets would travel all the time. They would get good food, good mead and wine. They would see the world, and they would play a big part in actually keeping Wales together. They would spread news around, and they could influence people in different parts of Wales. Most people didn't travel at that time, really. So the poets had an advantage. They could, you know, they knew what was going on in other parts of the country. In that context, yeah, it would be great to be able to do that kind of thing today. I think I'm doing as close a job as possible by going around schools. As in, that's great. As in, I travel a lot. I've seen, Wales is a very small country, but I've seen places that I'd never seen before over the last 2 years. And I have family in different parts of Wales, but I've still find new places, and it would be great to be able to do that and not work, maybe, as in not have a proper job, a salary coming in at the end of every month. It would be great, but in terms of actually writing the poetry, then, well, I would really enjoy being a professional poet in terms of writing poetry for people and other things. I'm really interested in the relationship between a poet and another person. It can be very, very interesting. I see it in the medieval poems where the best poets, they build a relationship, and you can see that relationship in the poetry, between them and their patron. They praise, yes, but how do they praise? They choose different aspects and they do it in a different way. And most of the time you see that the poets, they really, you can see a close affinity. They're real, they're actual friends with these people. And it's not just merely a professional relationship. But to be able to do that today, it would be great, I think. I would relish that opportunity to create public poetry. At the moment I'm able to do it, but we'll see.
Thank you,
Josh. Thank you, Diolch. I hope it wasn't too ad hoc.